The WBFO Brief Podcast is made possible by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center. Access to the newest treatments and most sophisticated testing is so important. It matters where you receive your cancer care. Spend one day with Roswell Park. Visit roswellpark.org.
Today's WBFO Brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
A lawsuit claims the city of Buffalo is not taking the proper steps in combating lead poisoning. A group of eight plaintiffs say the city is not complying with its own proactive rental inspection law, which calls for periodic inspections of all rental units in the city. Attorney John Lipset says he started representing lead-poisoned children in Buffalo in the 1990s.
But the city of Buffalo, as it has for the past 30-plus years, continues to drag its feet, continues to sweep the matter under the carpet while this crisis deepens. It continues to affect poor communities in the city and communities of new immigrants at a very high rate and an alarmingly high rate.
Though the law was passed 4 years ago, only 5,000 of the city's 36,000 rental units have reportedly been inspected. The city of Buffalo official says they do not comment on pending litigation. Meanwhile, the Comet Council has adopted a new resolution to establish the Office of Gun Violence Prevention. Proposed by Councilmember Zanetta Everhart, the resolution was introduced following recent incidents of gun violence. In May, six teenagers were shot, including a 14-year-old girl who died. On June 21st, a 3-year-old child was fatally shot. And Congressman Tim Kennedy says federal funding is available to help communities avoid tragedies like the recent fatal crash at a North Tonawanda Railroad crossing. According to Kennedy, $1.1 million is available in the Railroad Crossing Elimination Program. The New York Attorney General's Office of Special Investigation is now reviewing the Wednesday incident in which a man was shot and killed by a Buffalo police officer. The Attorney General's announcement coincided with the public release of the police body camera footage, which shows an officer being dragged along a speeding vehicle on Kensington Avenue when the officer opened fire and killed 25-year-old Davon Roberts. Upon releasing the video, Buffalo Police Commissioner Joseph Grimaglia told a media gathering that, quote, the level of force is justified by law. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is supporting legislation that looks to address recent allegations of misconduct by members of the United States Supreme Court. The issue is being addressed with two new pieces of legislation, the Supreme Court Ethics Recusal and Transparent Act and the Supreme Court Biennial Appointments and Term Limits Act. According to Gillibrand, quote, justices have accepted private jet travel, lavish hunting retreats, yacht vacations, and more from groups with cases before the court. And Chautauqua County officials are reaching out for poll workers in advance of what they expect to be a busy November presidential election. Training sessions are required for poll workers who are tasked with keeping watch at a variety of voting sites. Training sessions will take place between July 30th and August 15th and will be available at three different sites, Dunkirk, Jamestown, and Asheville. There's more information at votechautauqua.com.
This WBFO Brief podcast is made possible by Canisius University, where high-flying griffs find a top-flight education. For the last 8 years, Canisius has been recognized on U.S. News' list of best colleges and universities. Learn more at canisius.edu.
The National Weather Service now has confirmed 4 tornadoes touched down in western New York on Wednesday, and that number could actually increase. WBFO's Grant Ashley spoke to SUNY Brockport meteorology professor Scott Rochette about why tornadoes are so rare and whether we should expect more in the future.
We just got back from a storm chasing trip about 5 or 6 weeks ago. And well, we saw several storms, but only one was tornadic. And so to have all this stuff going down yesterday, like, oh, man. most people would be, they'll be scared to see a tornado. I'm excited as long as it's not in my neighborhood. That kind of thing does not happen in New York every day.
And, you mentioned this, we don't get tornadoes very frequently in western New York. Why are tornadoes so rare here?
It's basically because we don't often get the kind of instability that we need to get really vigorous thunderstorms. We do get them, obviously. I mean, we do get unstable air, especially during the summer. But the lakes do influence things because the waters are still relatively cool, especially in the earlier part of summer. And that tends to make the atmosphere around the area a little more stable. But it can also help focus thunderstorm development so a little bit away from the lakes as well. But we don't get the kind of instabilities that you see out in the Midwest, say. And so we don't get really vigorous thunderstorms happening to that same extent as you would in the Midwest. And so severe weather is really rare, okay, because it requires all these ingredients to come together in the same place at the same time. We can get really unstable air happening. It's just not as frequent.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we got three tornadoes yesterday in western New York.
Confirmed so far, yes. Okay. That number will probably go up.
Okay.
But I can't say for sure.
Why does it take so long to confirm tornadoes? Like, what's involved in that process?
Meteorologists from the National Weather Service offices have to go out into the field and do what's called a storm survey. And it means literally putting boots on the ground. Fortunately, now we have drones that can take pictures from above, and that really helps things along. But that, again, it requires interviewing people. It requires going out and looking at damage patterns. So these surveys can take a long time because a lot of these places are they're out in fields or in forests, and that's, you know, it's not easy to get to them. And there's only so many meteorologists in the office working that can go out and do a storm survey. So when there's 18 individual sites to survey, it's going to take a little bit to get to them all.
Okay, interesting. So we won't really understand the full, you know, impact of this storm for, you know, a couple more days, sounds like.
Easily.
Okay. Right. I guess, you know, could you tell me a little bit about how unprecedented this is? Like, you know, I can't think of a time when, you know, we had this many tornadoes in the area. Like, you know, is there a historic analog to this or not really?
The one event that I keep, that I come back to, was this tornado outbreak in May of 1985. It was a really significant outbreak of severe weather and tornadoes for New York and Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio. So, no, these kinds of things really don't happen very often, and that's a good thing. I mean, it really is. I mean, I want to say that the Buffalo Weather Service office usually issues a couple of tornado warnings a year for their forecast area. So it's obviously not a very common thing.
And last question before I let you go, should we be expecting more events like this in the future given climate change, or is this kind of a one-off freak event?
That's hard to say because there's a big difference between weather and climate. Okay. Climate is what you expect and weather is what you get. But the climate is getting warmer. Storms are getting more intense. They're getting wetter. There's more moisture being incorporated in them. And so it's a very distinct possibility that more frequent and more significant severe weather is possible. But again, it does require a whole host of things to come together at once. And that itself is pretty rare. So that said, with an atmosphere that is getting increasingly warm, there's a decent chance that we will start to see more significant severe weather happening in places that may not have seen it nearly as much, which really is frightening because if it's happening more frequently here, then it's probably going to happen more frequently in Texas and Oklahoma and Kansas as well. And that's probably the last thing they need.
That is SUNY Brockport meteorology professor Scott Rochette in conversation this morning with WBFO's Grant Ashley. The NRA's former chief financial officer has been banned for 10 years from serving as a fiduciary for a nonprofit in New York State. Jenna Flanagan has that story.
The agreement is part of a settlement announced by Attorney General Letitia James. It comes after a jury found Wilson Woody Phillips liable in February for violating his duties in managing the NRA and ordered him to pay $2 million in damages. James said in a statement that Phillips allowed financial mismanagement and corruption at the NRA to occur for decades. She added that New Yorkers deserve to know when they support a not-for-profit, those donations are being used to advance its mission, not squandered on lavish perks for staff or cronies. William Brewer, counsel for the NRA, said the announcement distorts the record and speaks to the motives of the New York Attorney General to promote her own interests over those of the NRA members she purports to be protecting. In Albany, I'm Jenna Flanagan for the New York Public News Network.
Much of Ontario is experiencing a construction boom, especially its biggest city, Toronto. But with the need to accommodate a growing population comes another problem, an infestation of rats. As correspondent Dan Karpinchuk reports, some residents are calling for immediate action.
We're building more. Construction shakes the ground. Rats are released into neighborhoods, and we need to figure out how to get ahead of it, manage it before the problem starts.
That's City Councillor Alejandra Bravo, one of those who has put forward a motion calling for a rat action plan. So just how bad is the problem? Liza Lukaszewski is a Central Toronto shop owner.
You see them, especially late at night, crossing the street, running around in the sidewalks, burrowing into the sides of stores, trying to get in. And a lot of residents on the streets, especially near the construction sites, are getting rats that are literally jumping around, frolicking in their yards.
And it's not just building construction that's adding to the problem, but homeless encampments as well, and people there disposing of garbage. Residents in West Central Toronto, like Dan Irwin, are concerned, saying their neighborhood is deteriorating because of the city's lack of action.
Somebody please advise our neighborhood what we can do about rats. City has dealt with it before, obviously. We don't have a clue. Do we poison them? What do we do with the carcasses once we poison them? How do we prevent them from migrating?
City officials say the number of calls about rodent issues have been increasing. There were 1,400 complaints in 2022, then 1,600 last year, and already this year there have been nearly 800 calls, and it's clear the number of rats are on the rise. Some of the concerns include rats carrying diseases and damage to aging infrastructure. Bill Dowd is with Skedaddle Human Wildlife Control.
So there's lots of different options out there, and property owners and the cities need to be diligent. And of course, controlling food sources, garbage and waste that sits out needs to be under proper maintenance and control.
The city came up with a rat reduction strategy in 2018, but the plan was shelved because of a lack of resources during the pandemic. Toronto City Council has directed city staff to come up with an action plan to reduce the number of rats. It has also called on the city manager to consult with other North American cities on their approach to the problem. That plan will come before council later this month. In September, New York will host the Urban Rat Summit, which aims to bring together experts in pest control, lawmakers, and researchers to share best practices about controlling rat populations. For WBFO News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto on the Canadian Beat.
For Theatre Talk on WBFO, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
And we're all over the map this week. Little things popping up here and there, but it is the final weekend of The Winter's Tale at Shakespeare in Delaware Park.
And not that often performed, so brush up your Shakespeare, as they say, and get over for your final opportunities.
Pursued by Bear. Yeah, final weekend of that. What's the next one they've got coming?
The next one is The Comedy of Errors. That'll be a couple weeks down the road. In the meantime, the traveling show is back up when the main stage is dark. The traveling show is up, A Midsummer Night's Tour, coming to a place near you. You have to go to their website to find out the venues.
Yeah, we can't do that by radio. It's
no.
Too much. But opened this week up at Musical Fair. Not so odd. Years ago, they were Summer Fair before they expanded. And they're doing 100 Days, which is a song cycle. And the 100 days refers to, if you knew you only had 100 days to live, how would you live your life? Cheerful little thought, isn't it? And so this song cycle by the Bengtsons, the music is by the Bengtsons, folk rock music, to explore that idea.
That'll be up for quite a while. Not so much with Alice by Heart, Bellissima Productions, putting that on over at the Allendale Theater. And it's set down in the subway tubes during the World War II Blitz, when two characters comfort each other by reading from Alice in Wonderland.
That would be comforting.
Or terrifying. I mean, if you really get into Alice in Wonderland, it's a little weird.
That was a big thing in the 70s, that college campuses would screen Disney's Alice in Wonderland and get high and go. The number of adaptations or shows inspired by Alice in Wonderland. Susan Sontag did one in New York a few years ago. And one I've always been intrigued by is Keen Nguyen's Alice in Slasherland. That could be kind of fun, right? Lots of places to go with this. Last season, ART also set a play in the London tubes during the Blitz. London Calling, confining people to the tubes of London during the Blitz. And there was a production of George Bernard Shaw's Heartbreak House in New York a few years ago. Same setting, same idea. There we go.
There we go. I was thinking 100 days, kind of introspective. And, you know, what would you do if you had 100 days? Something a little bit similar down at Chautauqua, Birthday Candles, a play by Noah Hadel. And it's, well, we jump through a bunch of birthdays from the 17th birthday all the way up to the 101st birthday. Again, one of those introspective plays, but I gather you've seen this.
I saw Deborah Messing do it. Vivian Benesch directed it in New York. She's closely associated with Chautauqua, of course. Beautiful play. And the woman goes back to the house that she had known and just sort of sets up and begins to bake the birthday cake that she had always baked. But now it's actually in a stranger's kitchen. And we go back through other birthdays of her life and the neighbor who loved her consistently. And it is a beautiful and thoughtful play. And Chautauqua always does a beautiful job. Gorgeous to be down there in the summertime, and seeing a play is a great thing to do.
Now, I guess at the other end of the spectrum on thoughtful plays is a total farce. The Golden Girls, The Lost Episodes, Volume 5. Every year they get crazier.
Now, I'm told that this one's far more contemplative and philosophical.
I do not believe you, Mr. Chase, not at all.
Contemplations on a cheesecake, yes. Yes, complacencies of the peignoir and late coffee and oranges in a sunny chair. This time, of course, over a cheesecake. Yeah.
Apparently, in episode 2 of the 2, Sophia has been murdered and all of the girls have motive to kill her.
Oh.
Is that hot chocolate and oranges or is it coffee and oranges?
Coffee. Coffee and oranges in a sunny chair. And the green freedom of a cockatoo. You know this too.
I knew it. At one point, obviously. And I'm not even 101 years old, and it's gone.
Well, I went to Trinity Hartford, so yeah, I know this poem.
Damn well better.
Wallace Stevens, yes. Let be finale of scene. Yes.
You better know your Connecticut poets.
And mobile artists, yes, absolutely.
And we've been talking about opera in Buffalo. Not an opera per se, but a lot of opera music by Giacomo Puccini. It's a Puccini Gala Opera Concert this Sunday at Art Park.
Do they have Holly Boulay?
They do not.
Puccini wrote that music specifically for her, you know.
One of our favorite Buff State professors.
Yes.
Beautiful
yes.
voice. Yes. Wonderful person. No, apparently they have a small busload of Metropolitan Opera stars coming up to Art Park.
Oh, them. Oh. Really? Well, that sounds enticing. Yeah.
Sunday at 2.
Having some stars come up and sing, that appeals to me. Art Park.
Art Park. Well, there used to be an opera force decades ago, and I think they would like to get back to being that. This is a step in the right direction.
For Theater Talk on WBFO,
I'm Peter Holm.
And I'm Anthony Chase.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.